Good morning, everyone. It really is a privilege, and I am thankful to have Michael with us this morning because, you know, at least somebody will give me a little bit of feedback. So you do that all morning long, and we will be really good to go, please. I need to make a correction before I begin here. Probably most of the gals, I was talking with Steve about this a little bit yesterday. I think most of the gals would probably like their husbands to leave for about a month rather than, you know, worrying about what goes on. So it's okay, guys. If you want to join us, please do. I think you'll be all right. I do appreciate being able to be here this morning. I specifically am honored to be in your presence. And the reason it's an honor for me is because I know the support that you have given to this organization that Mr. Doty has put together. And I hope my message today will encourage you to continue to do what you're doing in the capacity that you're able to do it. I didn't prepare a message that's going to be point by point by point, but rather going to be more of a thoughtful message for you. I could basically just end this right now because the communion meditations, or the meditations this morning, were fantastic, and I appreciate that very much from both of the gentlemen that presented those to us. When I think about the adventures that I've been blessed to have alongside Steve, it's hard sometimes to put into words what we experience when we're out in the field. Some of you who have traveled along with this purpose know what I'm talking about. So I was thinking last night, how am I going to communicate some of the things that I have seen personally for your guys' benefit that will help you understand how much I really appreciate specifically this congregation and those of you who've come here this morning to listen. And I thought of a story that I want to talk about just for a little bit. Thank you for the introduction, Steve. I appreciate I've coming from Bozeman, Montana. I have 5 generations from Montana. My great-grandfather homesteaded in the mountains, and he was some sort of Indian. I don't know. We've never researched what it was because he gave up his rights to the Indian deal that the government was handing out because he didn't want to have any handouts. He decided he wanted to make this thing go on his own, and so that translated down into the generations to follow. But we have deep roots in Montana, and we have many friends. We've had a big impact through the things that have happened in our lives. I'll talk a little bit about that this morning. And by the grace of God, our family has been able to win many souls to Christ in that area. And we're very thankful for that opportunity. And that ultimately is what this is all about. It doesn't matter where we live, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Montana, even Butte, Montana, they're okay too. It doesn't matter, because we're all in this with the same purpose. The story I want to tell you is about a girl, a lady that we met in Belarus. I don't remember which time into Belarus it was. I don't have a good memory for things like that. I'm impacted more by events than I am by dates. So I apologize ahead of time if I give you the wrong date, if this is being recorded. Somebody says, oh, actually it was this day. Well, I don't care. It was close to that. And I'll probably reference Steve for some names because he seems to remember names quite better than I do. Her name was Luda, I think. And she had come in from the Ukraine and basically into Belarus running for her life and for the safety of her children. The Belarusians were very kind and they were able to get her a little flat to start out. The neighborhood in the area brought some food for her and her 2 kids, one of which was deaf, and the other one had a mild form of epilepsy. So her particular situation was challenging because for her to come into Belarus in the way that she had to, fleeing from the dangers of war, was difficult because she couldn't just get there and get settled, and she didn't have any money to put them into whatever school, because when you have a deaf son and an epileptic daughter, you don't get to just throw them into any institution. You have to kind of be specialized with those. So it was a challenge for her. The reason I wanted to bring this story up to you, this one impacted me quite greatly when I first showed up in Minsk and when we traveled on to the different areas of Belarus, is because when we entered her home, we entered it due to a lady that kind of runs a Red Cross program over there. Viera is her name, and we have had quite a great relationship with her, and that relationship has translated into many Bible studies when we get there. She's a soldier for the Lord, and you want to keep praying for Viera, the Red Cross lady. That's what I've always called her, I think. Okay, you know Viera. Okay, great, great. So you know who I'm talking about. So you get to hear the story from my perspective. Maybe you've heard it from Steve's perspective. But from my perspective, it may have been a little bit different. Was we were sitting there, and she's in, and she sits down. We had Yulia with us. You guys met Yulia. And then it was her sitting there, and then her two kids were kind of in and out a little bit, the son particularly because he was deaf and just wasn't real useful for him to be there, so she had other things for him to do. So she sits down, and she's trembling like this, her hands shaking. She can't quit crying, and she physically couldn't quit. And I'm sitting there going, man, what in the world? I mean, Steve is not that ugly.
Could you say that a little louder?
Yeah, he was talking this morning about being in Vietnam and how the Vietnam, or it was Burma probably, and they hadn't seen a white person. And when they saw Steve, you know, he was, wow, that's the best looking fella I've ever seen. But it's a good thing I wasn't there. That's all I can say.
That
sealed it, right. So she's trembling, and I look across the, you know, we're sitting in some chairs, and they're sitting maybe on a little end of a bed or something is what I remember. And I'm kind of looking at Yulia, and just kind of, she knows what I'm thinking, that what's wrong. So she whispers over to her, and she kind of finds out what's going on. Well, this lady had never seen an American before. But she'd heard about them. She'd heard that Americans were a very kind and generous people. And so she couldn't stop trembling, and she couldn't stop crying, because she knew that God was doing something for her. She knew that God brought somebody. Because here, think about this. Here's a woman from Ukraine, fleeing from war, getting help in Belarus, and sitting across the room from Americans. Now, how does that happen? How did it happen that we happened to be the ones to get to that location in her house and be the ones to sit across from her? So think about what's going on in her mind. She is in the will of God. And so were we. And so she's trembling, and Yulia told us later that she was doing this because she was in the presence of an American. And my first thought was, you know what? She wasn't in the presence of Americans. She was in the presence of Christians. That's why it was so special for me, specifically in that moment. And what we do every day as Christians, when we go to work, when we fight the battles that we fight in our lives, we are putting together an assault upon the evil forces that cause people to get into the situations that they're in. And so in my introduction here, I want you to understand my deep gratitude for you guys and for Mr. Steve for putting together an organization that helps young guys like me. I still consider myself young. I don't know if it's true or not, but you guys all consider yourself young, so I'll keep saying it too. To have the opportunity to serve at a capacity that I'm able to and that the Lord wills. But there's something I want you guys to understand. Not everybody can get out there in the field with us. It's just a fact of life. You might not be in the position to do that. But the position that you are in is the position God wants you to be in. It doesn't matter if we're in a house flat in Belarus with a Ukrainian sitting across from us and Americans talking to a girl to see where we can help. Or if you're in your living room with, as the good gentleman said this morning, opening up the cupboard so that you can get some righteousness. That's what the battle is about. This is a team effort. So when you're in your homes, and maybe we're out in that field, please do not underestimate the power that you have and the impact that you have. A lot of the stories that Steve tells the people are stories that you guys have given to him. And this is all firepower. He'll tell them in Vietnam, this money that we're given is raised by the church that I am coming out of. Please understand the impact that every single person has in the kingdom. And you don't have to jump on that plane to do it. You do it right out of your own backyard. You do it right in your neighbor's living room. You do it right in your co-worker's office all the time. That's what's building the kingdom. So sometimes you hear these stories, and quite honestly, traveling for me is not my favorite thing in the world. I like to be at home. I like to, you know, work with the people that are in my local congregation or with some of the friends that I have or co-workers. I run a business and I have 20 employees, not including some of the office people, and we're in construction business. So you can kind of imagine that is not the highest quality of people sometimes that you get when you're looking at physical standards. Sometimes it can be a little rough around the edges. Some of the guys I get that come, you know, for interviews have had a rough past. But you know what? We have a bright future. We have the gospel of the glory of Christ in front of us. And there is no reason that we as employers, as employees, as fathers, as mothers, as sisters and brothers, can't bring that gospel of glory to everybody we have contact with, everybody, because it comes from within us. So I want to thank you as a congregation here for everything you've done, for your support, and please continue to do such right out of your own homes, because we can't do what we do if you guys don't continue to pray and support the work that we do. There's two words that I want us to think about this morning. The two words are trust God. My family, and I'm going to bring my situation up because it's different from yours, but it's the same results, it's the same types of struggles that you have been through. Everybody in here has had, that's over the age of one and can remember, has had struggles. You know, we think about this path that we're going to take in life, how straight it's going to be. We think about school, we might think about college and a career, we might think about a family, we might think about, you know, what are we going to do when we retire. We think about this linear path. But really, what is that path? When we try to do it on our own efforts, for sure that path takes side roads. For sure that path has lots of tall mountains that have to be climbed. And sometimes once you climb, you know, we talk about climbing the tall mountain and you get to the top and you're victorious. But guess what you get to do now? Come back down. Sometimes going down hills is harder for people than going up them. I'm one of those guys because I struggle with parts of my feet. So I'd much rather climb it than come back down it. Trust God. In 1989, my aunt and uncle were moving from Spokane, Washington to Butte, Montana. In the midst of their travel, they had come across an area where there was an asphalt plant. And this asphalt plant was, you know, close to a road that they were traveling on, and a huge gust of wind came up, one like they hadn't seen in many, many years. Well, when the gust of wind came across the asphalt plant, it blew the dust off of the asphalt hills across the road. So imagine going through dust that's brown, that's, you know, a cloud of dust. When you're in the midst of it, I think Steve may attest to this, being in some of the areas he's been in, you can't see anything. But imagine if the dust was black. So it's like entering into immediate, complete blackness. And when I think of blackness, I think of going down into the Lewis and Clark Caverns there near Bozeman. you get down there and they shut the lights off and you're how many hundreds of feet down underground, and they shut the lights off and they tell you wave your hand across your face, you can't see nothing. You can feel the wind blow from the movement of your hand, but you can't see anything. That's the my idea of blackness, so black and dark you can cut it with a knife, right? So they go, they're driving down the road and the dust blows across the road. Well, there was a semi that was in front of them that as soon as he hit that black wall, he stopped in the middle of the road because he didn't know what was in front of him. He didn't know if he could go right or left. Should he pull off the road? It was that kind of a panic, and it was that quick. Well, right behind him was my uncle in a car, an old Subaru, with his kids. One of my cousins was lying on a cooler in the very far back. The other two were actually buckled in, and he was buckled in. Well, they ran right into the back of that semi, but he was stopped, so you wouldn't think that was too bad. Well, unfortunately, my cousin, which we were real close to them as growing up, flew out of the back of the car, lying on that cooler, through the windshield, and hit the semi, and then down into a little culvert. He was dead. Then my other two cousins had the seatbelts on, and when they hit, one of the seatbelts lacerated the liver of one of my cousins, so he almost bled to death, but they were able to save him. He was okay. But what happened was, once they hit the semi, my aunt was right behind them in a Chevy S10. And when she got into the cloud that was there, she hit their car, and actually their truck went over the top of the car and smashed it down more, which smashed one of my cousins' sides of his head and caused him to be paralyzed on one side. My uncle, at that point, who was a track star up at the Bozeman High School, still holds the record for the 200-meter dash, was paralyzed from his neck down. In 2008 or so, we found out that my brother's 2-year-old daughter had cancer. It was called Ewing sarcoma. It was a cancer in the small of her back. She was 2 years old. We had just started TJ Electric as a business. I was just a brand new electrician. I had no idea what I was doing, and all of a sudden, and my brother was running kind of things. He was a seasoned electrician, knew what he was doing, had done a lot more things. They didn't have, being in Bozeman, being in Montana, you don't have the highest and best technology in the hospitals to take care of things. So they had to off and take her to Oregon, a place near Portland, in order to get the care that she was given. So he calls me up, he says, this is the situation, this is what we have to do, and we're going to be leaving. And I said, well, okay, that's what it has to be. You got to go, you got to do your things for your family. How long do you think you'll be? That's a good question, right? I don't know. I can imagine what was going through his mind when this happened. About 2 years is what it took for them to be able to come back. And so it was a very difficult time for him with his daughter, and it was a very difficult time for me, being left with a business that I had no idea what I was doing in. Imagine just being thrown into a new job and then being left with the responsibility of everything there was to do with it, is what the situation I was in. But it was nothing compared to the grief that he was going through, wondering if his child was going to make it through a time of cancer. And it was difficult. Between the chemotherapy that she had to go through and the radiation treatments, it destroyed her growth plates in her lower parts of her body. It also destroyed her ability to ever have any children. So she's, I think, 13 right now, and she's about this tall, but she's alive, and she's doing well. And I appreciate the prayers. Many of you do here know about the situation there. Well, he moved back here in around 2010, and not shortly after he moved back, they were in a place where you couldn't get out and ride motorcycles, and my brother and I, we were raised on motorcycles. Even though my grandpa had a ranch and horses, we were raised on motorcycles, and we chased the horses on the motorcycle. We didn't ride them. We thought that was way more fun, to kick up the mud behind the motorcycle and watch the horses go. So when he got back, one of the first things he wanted to do was get us all out and go riding. Well, the weekend that he chose to go motorcycle riding to this track out near Livingston was a weekend we had planned for a birthday party for my son in Billings, because they have a big kind of a outdoor or indoor water park over there that we went to. So we left. We went to Billings. My son was just a little guy. And we went over there to have some fun. And while we were there, and they went over to this motorcycle track, which we were supposed to go with them, we got the phone call that his son, Avery, who was 10, had been in an accident, a motorcycle accident. And I'm thinking, okay, it can't be that bad because you're on a dirt track on a dirt bike, and usually if you have an accident and you crash, you get a few bumps and bruises. You're wearing a helmet, you're wearing some gear, you're wearing full-length shirts or jackets or whatever, and you're protected. So I'm not thinking. So I asked him, well, how bad is it? What happened? Well, it's bad. It's really bad. In fact, we're not sure if he's going to make it. So, you know, panic sets in, and you're wondering, oh, Lord, you know, what in the world? And he actually didn't know exactly what happened at the time when he called me. He just knew it was bad because the boy was unresponsive. So he, and the thing is that my son and Avery were very, very close. And so I know for a fact that when Avery would have been out riding, that my son would have been right by his side had we chosen to go on that trip with him. So it kind of hit home. I told him, what do you want us to do? Where are you going to be? He said, well, they're life flighting him from Livingston on into Billings. And why don't you just meet us there? So we packed up, headed to Billings, and met him there and waited to hear the news. So he was riding his motorcycle, come over the top of a hill. It was right after lunch. Two guys were racing behind him, didn't realize he was on the track, came over the top of the hill, and the two riders that were racing, instead of just rolling over the hill, they would jump over the hill. But when they jumped over the hill, they had noticed, well, what they didn't notice, it was too late, he had crashed on the other side of it, just laid his bike over was all. And when he was trying to get his bike up, they had come over, jumped off the hill, and one of the riders landed on him. And it smashed his helmet because of the impact, and then it also got his brain. And so he was brain dead. And it was a sad thing, because when you would look at him, he looked perfectly fine. There wasn't a scratch on him. But you could take his helmet and you could squish it in half from the impact. See, I tell you this because we all have things that we have to go through, and there's a very specific reason for it. And many of you in this room have gone through and are continuing to go through much of the same things. I want you to understand that you cannot minimize the side roads that God puts us on. Never minimize them, because they're put on those for a very good reason. And I'll explain that a little bit more. What I want us to understand this morning is that God is the painter, and we are the picture. When we have the understanding about the empowerment that God gives us as individuals, there's something that gives us hope, something that gives us strength, that gives us the ability to get through all of the things that we go through successfully and impact the people that we have contact with. I have been honored to work alongside two men in this room that I highly respect. I'm going to tell you why I respect them. Bach Pham in the back and Mr. Steve Doty right here. The reason I respect these guys is because I know some of the roads that they have been taken down. I've heard stories many times. And just so you know, they never get old. Not for me. They just don't. And I use the stories because my story in my life is different. I use the stories of the life things that they've been through. And I can tell when I'm working with these guys that they were leaders in their time in the work field. Because when I get out in the field with them, they're leaders. I was able to fall right in line just this last year in Vietnam with Bach, because I could tell the best leaders in the world are the ones who know how to serve. That's scriptural. The ones who know how to serve. And all of you in this room are servants. And when you serve, you will be the best of the leaders. So when we're in Vietnam, Steve warned me about Bach.
Didn't do any good.
Yeah. And I appreciated very much the leadership skills that I was able to glean from the two of them working together. As much as they fought each other, I was able to learn the great leadership skills that they have because they know how to serve. You know, Bach would be the first guy to go into a restaurant that we would eat and check and make sure this was a safe place to eat. Because guess what? You get into those countries where they're cooking the food and the front of the store looks okay, but you don't really know what the back of those stores look like until you get on a boat and ride down that river and see that they're washing the dishes right back in the back in water that you have no idea how clean it is. Well, one wrong move in a country like that, and you're down for a week and a half minimum. Well, what does that do to you? That shuts the trip down. If you don't have somebody going in front of you, making sure it's safe, making sure you don't get sick, you're done. Gotta have it. Appreciate the leadership that comes from this congregation and from this area very, very much. And I appreciate it. I wanted to tell that to Bach and to Steve while I had the opportunity, because God is the painter and we are the picture. Everybody's playing a part. Everybody has a part. I want you to imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. At first, perhaps you can understand what he's doing. He's getting the drains right and he's stopping the leaks on the roof and so on. You know that those jobs needed doing, and so you're not surprised. But it's not long. He starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts and no longer makes sense. What on earth is God up to? The explanation is that he's building quite a different house than the one you thought he was going to build. He's throwing out a new wing here. He's putting on an extra floor there. He's running up towers, and he's making courtyards. You thought you were going to be made into a decent little cottage, but he is building a palace. Why? It's because he intends to live in it. That's who we are. That's the picture that's being painted. That's us. I want you to understand how important God sees us. We are his army. We are his people. Let's turn in our Bibles to let's start in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Corinthians chapter 3, verse 9. We are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. I was in the restaurant with Steve last night, and I noticed behind him, I don't think that he probably noticed it since it was to his back, there was a picture of, it's probably common to these restaurants, I don't remember the name of it, was that we ate last night.
Bob Evans.
Okay, so many of you have probably seen the picture. It looked to me like the farm at which they used to make their goods and whatever, because they had a large picture of it. Maybe it's the main farm for the distribution of the restaurants. And I thought, that's a nice picture. Nice farm, large house, trees in the background, hill behind it. That's a nice picture. When I think about a picture that God paints, I think about a field. I think about hills and nice trees. I've been here in Michigan in the fall when the trees start to turn, and I was telling Steve, man, these things look fake. They're so awesome and beautiful in the fall. I'd never seen anything like it. In Montana, we have a lot of pine trees, and they don't change. They're all the same all year long, so you're looking at the same thing. Certain areas you can go and see it, but not the splendor which I saw. We would drive down to where you guys live, and you go down that main driveway, and all those trees that tower up on either side of the road. And in the fall, I'm just like, wow, God is amazing in the picture he paints on this earth. And that is a temporary picture. That's not the real thing. Because you are the picture God intends to paint. So 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 9, he says, God's field, you're God's building. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2 as well. Everybody likes to read verse 8 and 9 and run it completely out of context, but for our purposes, we're just going to skip those two. So we know what the context is for. I'm going to read verse 10. We are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them. You see, God is, he's making this painting. He is moving every piece into the position so when the time's right, he can display to all of the angels his true creation, his new creation. That's what this is about. This is about God's glory. This is about what he is going to show Satan of who the boss is. And he's doing it through us. That's what God's doing. Let's turn to John chapter 7. This is another picture I love from the scriptures. This is the one that I appreciate probably the very most. You ever seen the paintings? A good painting? Or even when we were in Vietnam and we saw those, what do they call the silk? Huh? The silk embroidery. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. This is some artistry. And they would take us over to the ladies who would be making them and how intricate that is. And they're expensive. And I see why the labor that goes into making one of those is unbelievable. Unbelievable in the beauty. And when you look at these things, you can actually almost, you look through them and it's like a 3D picture that every time you're looking in it, every different angle, it jumps out at you a little bit different. It's amazing. So we have examples of true art and true artists here so we can understand what's going on. Well, when I think of a picture of beauty and peace, I think of a river or a small creek that's running through in a mountain. I took Jay Wilson one time on a ride up in the mountains when we were at Spanish Peaks Clinic in Montana. I said, hey, I want you to take a few minutes and jump on this four-wheeler with me. I want to take you up somewhere and you won't regret it. And he's talked about it in some of his stories ever since, because I knew he wouldn't regret it. We rode this thing up this mountain. It only took us about a half an hour to get up in there. Rode the four-wheeler up in there and got up to the top of this mountain. And when we got up to the very top, I said, you know, here's in this particular place, we no longer go there. I go there once in a while. When you get to the top and you look out, it's just an absolute picturesque, beautiful place to behold. And it's where I would do my prayer time when I was up there. When we came back, I took him back a little different route, and I took him to a creek, and I said, I want you to come in here and taste this. I want you to see what this is like. So he did. He's like, yeah, I miss this, because he actually grew up near the mountains. I miss this, because it was a river flowing with pure water. Well, John chapter 7, God's doing something for us. Now on the last day, verse 37, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture said, from his innermost being will flow rivers of living water. You see this painting that God's got up in heaven, that the angels behold, that the angels long to be in. They long for it, the book of Hebrews says. This painting is a picture of us with a living stream flowing from within. You see how important we are to God? You see what he's doing for each and every one of us? We're a painting. We're a masterpiece. To shrink away from God's plan is not humility. It is laziness and it is cowardice. But to submit, to become a part, to move forward, is obedience. And it gains you courage. So never minimize, never ever minimize your position in the kingdom of God. And don't ever let anybody tell you any different, because God's painting a picture with your life. It doesn't matter if you're young and you have a lot of years left, which you're never guaranteed anyway, or if you're advanced in years and you don't feel like you have a lot of years left. I mean, look at the Apostle Paul. He went through some stuff, man. That guy was beaten up. That guy was torn up. At one point, it seems like from his stoning, he couldn't see anymore. And then guess what? He gets a glimpse of heaven itself. He says, I know a man who 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. Such a man was caught up to the third heaven. And when he come back from that, he said, and he saw things which a man is not permitted to speak. So don't go down and buy those books about those afterlife people, because if Paul wasn't permitted to speak it, nobody else is either. They didn't see the light of God up there. They saw something else. You know what that was. What about man is not permitted to speak? You know what he saw? He saw what God's painting up there. But he can't tell you what all's in that. You got to look for that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it says that the first man came from the earth. Let's turn over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Let's read verse 45. So also it's written, the first Adam became a living soul. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. This is 1 Corinthians 15, 45. However, the spiritual is not first, but the natural, then the spiritual. The first man is from earth, earthy. The second man is from heaven. As is the earthy, so also are those who are earthy. And as is the heavenly, so also are those who are heavenly. Just as we have borne the image of the earthy, let us also bear the image of the heavenly. I like that translation a little bit better than what the New American Standard gives. Let us also. You see, what you're going through now might be an earthy situation, and you have to bear the earthy. But you can, and understand this, you cannot bear the heavenly if you don't first bear the earthy in your life. There's two opposing views. It's like good and evil. You can't understand what good really is unless you see what evil is. You don't understand the power of the light if you haven't first seen the darkness. And sometimes we'll get put into situations. Steve's been more, and maybe Bach probably more than I have, when they're traveling into some of these countries where they see the darkness and it seems brighter than the light or darker than the power of the light. And so what they understand real quickly is that it takes power to cut through that darkness. Serious power. So we're barren. We're barren things of the earth. But as Christians, guess what? We're no longer here. Spiritually speaking, we are seated with Jesus Christ in heaven on that throne with Jesus at the right hand of God himself. That's the whole point of the book of Hebrews. That's the whole point of the veil being torn in two when Jesus died on the cross. You know, there was hundreds and thousands of people under the Romans that died on crosses. I think even maybe it was one of the apostles, maybe Peter, possibly, from the Book of Martyrs, was crucified upside down. I don't remember. One of them. There's hundreds, thousands of people. What was significant about Jesus? It's because he came from heaven. And when he came from heaven, he was bringing a spirit that was going to give us the light, the glory of God right within us, a river flowing. So understand the picture that God's painting of you individually. Psalm 113, verse 5. That's a very familiar passage of scripture. I'll wrap this up here shortly. Psalm 113, verse 5, who is like the Lord our God, who is enthroned on high, who humbles himself? You see, what I want you to understand, as I switch gears a little bit here, what I want you to understand is we have a very specific task that God has given us. And he tells us what that is in Psalm 113. So he says, verse 5, start over. Who is like the Lord our God, who is enthroned on high, who humbles himself to behold the things that are in heaven and in the earth? He raises the poor from the dust, and he lifts the needy from the ash heap. To do what? You know, there's a lot of people out there that have written self-help books. You can get on YouTube and you can watch motivational videos all day long, and they will make you feel good about yourself. They will give you direction. They will help you be disciplined. They will help you have a focus that maybe you have never had in your life before. But you know what they won't do? They won't forgive you. And as a result of the forgiveness, you won't ever have a clean conscience doing those. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you got to have a clean conscience to move forward in the Lord. So you know what Jesus does? You know what God does? That's in verse 8. Read verse 7 again, though. He raises the poor from the dust, and he lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with the princes of his people. You know, one of the biggest proofs to me that the Bible's the Word of God is that God sent somebody down here who made the claim that he was God himself. And not only did he make the claim, he proved it with the miracles and with the witnesses that saw what he did. So when Jesus raised from the dead and he had the witnesses that wrote this stuff down and appeared to, at one time, more than 500 brethren, he showed proof that his claim was true. But that's not really the proof I was looking for. The proof I was looking for was the very fact that God sent himself here. I want you to name one religion you have ever studied or heard of where the God himself became a man, humbled himself, and died for men. It doesn't exist. But it is the ultimate display of humility from a God. And to me, that's the God. You may need more than that, but to me that makes sense because I know how people are. When we're out with Direct Connect and we're in Vietnam or we're in Belarus and we're being humbled in these places and we've humbled ourselves to put ourselves at their level to help them out, and I see that person tremble and those tears of trembling become tears of joy, then I know that what God did was the real thing, because I see it in the lives of people every day that I work with them. I see it in their lives. Don't think you're insignificant, because every day you have an opportunity to shine God's light within another person and watch them grow. Psalm 113, we read, did we finish reading that? Oh yeah, it did. So he makes them sit with the prince. See, that's what this is all about. He makes them sit with the princes of his people. Who is the one who overcomes the world? Only the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. You know, you can do the programs, you can do the alcohol programs, drug rehab programs. You can get yourself all pumped up from some self-motivation on YouTube. But until you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you lose. That's the bottom line. You've got to believe. And I'm speaking to the choir here. You would not be sitting here if you didn't believe that this morning. I understand. What I'm here to do is to help you move forward. There was a video that Denzel Washington put out, and I really appreciated it. You might want to take a look at it sometime. When you fall, he said, fall forward. That way when you land, you can see what you're landing on. Don't fall back. If you have to fall back, then you fall back on your faith, something grounded, something solid. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to get out there. Detours are going to be taken. We don't mean to. At some level, we are people that are subject to the laws and rules of science. This happens. Do not get discouraged on that stuff, but use it, learn from it, and move forward, and fall forward when you fall. That way you can see where you're falling. I appreciate many of you in here, all of you in here, because of the resolve that you have. I just sit here and listen to the announcements, and I listen to the effort that you're putting in for the local church, to get the word out, to raise some money. And nothing moves without money. It's the bottom line. You got to have it. It's the way God intended it, and it's okay. I appreciate the effort that you guys are making. Dreams without goals are just dreams, and they ultimately fuel disappointment. Life goals, daily goals, monthly goals, have goals so you have something to achieve, something right in front of you. You must apply discipline and consistency. Working hard is what successful people do. Successful Christians, they work hard. They don't stop. And when it comes down to the time where they're awarded the crown of glory, God looks down at them and he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master." So you must apply discipline and consistency. Working hard is what successful people do. Just because you're doing a lot more, just because you're doing a lot more doesn't mean you're getting a lot more done. Don't confuse movement with progress. You can run in place all day long and get nowhere. Secondly, you will never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. So while you're running, don't think you're taking it with you. Because at some point, you're going. You're going to be put in the ground. And it's the things you do for the Lord that matter. Because you know what? There's a picture in the New Testament that Jesus kind of subtly put in there. He said, "No longer will you see the angels of God descending on this ladder." Remember Jacob had the dream, saw the ladder, angels of God ascending and descending upon the ladder. Well, Jesus said, "That's me." He's the ladder that extended in the book of John. He says, I'm that one. He has made the bridge. He has put the ladder in. I think of, you know, I don't know where I got this picture, but of an escalator, because I don't like climbing upstairs. I think of an escalator that's moving its way on up to heaven. And Jesus is the one that's stretched out between here and heaven. And you got a choice. You can get on that escalator, but you got to do it his way. You can't just make up, "Oh, I'm a good person. I do humanitarian aid work." Good. Good for you. Keep it up. People need that. But did you change their eternity? That's the question. You might have changed their physical state for a day, a month, a year, 10 years. But what does it matter if you can't change their eternity? And does it take a lot of groundwork to lay before they'll let you in for the important stuff? Absolutely. Please don't take that to mean that you don't need to do the physical things, because you have to. That's how you break through. That's why he does humanitarian work. That's how you break through the barriers so that you can get them on the ladder so they can get to glory. It's not how much you have, but it's what you do with what you have. I love this. I will always have this in my arsenal when I'm speaking. The most selfish thing you can do in this world is help someone else. And you might be going, "What?" Well, come with us sometime and see what we do and see the actual benefit you receive. If it's in the cards for you to work on this, or maybe you can't go with Steve, maybe go do something else, maybe you go out your back door and work with your neighbor. It doesn't matter where you are to help people. It does not matter. Just go out and help them. It's the most selfish thing you can do because of the actual huge benefit you receive from doing it. And I want you to think about it that way. You want to be selfish? You want to do your thing? Go help somebody. And you will see exactly what I'm saying. Go help them. Don't sit back in the room and do nothing. Don't shut the doors. That's what the cowards do. Get out there and get something done for the Lord. Help people. It's not about the jewelry. It's not about the big house or the fast car. The offering of ourself is about the joy you will receive from it, especially when you help somebody cross the line into eternity, because that's the way God intended. He didn't send the angels down here to do it. He sent us. That's what we do. Tonight, this is what I want us to do. I want you to put your slippers so far underneath your bed that when you wake up in the morning, you have to get on your knees to reach them. I want you to say thank you in advance to the Lord for everything He has done for you. And I want you to understand that what you are asking for in your life, according to God and the Scriptures, you have it. And you need to believe it. You have it. And when you get it, I want you to reach back and pull someone else in with you. Each one, teach one. That's what God intended for it. That's why Jesus came. Each one, teach one. If you want to get something you never have had, you got to do something you have never done. So I invite you this morning, if you're not a Christian, find out what it takes to become a Christian. Ask. There's lots of people in here who can tell you. You studied it. Scripture isn't two ways of interpretation. It's one. It's clear. We can study this stuff, and we can study together. Come now, let us reason together. Though your sins are as scarlet, they'll be made white like wool. It's not when we reason together that we all part in disagreement. That's not how sins get forgiven. They get forgiven by a reasonable, honest look at the Scriptures. So I encourage you this morning, if you want to change, you got to do something different than you've ever done. And God is offering and opening that up to you today. Thank you for your time.